Good afternoon. On behalf of the Tacoma Historical Society, I'm Joe Beaumont with another edition of Grit City Stories. Today with me, I have Chris Staudinger, the owner-operator of Pretty Gritty Tools, and we are here for a spooky season. You ready for that, Chris?
I absolutely am. Thanks for having me on.
No, thank you for coming on by. So it's fall here. Like I said, it's the most haunted time of year. Skies are gray, like 364 days. Mm-hmm. So I'm ready to, like, what's scary about this place? What should I be nervous about?
Oh, man. I mean, where to even begin?
I know. I just kind of threw the open-ended one there. I'm sorry.
I mean, there are so many really quintessential Tacoma scary stories that have come out of the last 100-plus years of this place. Mm-hmm. I think there are the more famous ones, and then there's some obscure ones. So where do you want to start?
Okay, let's start with what you would say is probably the most famous, scariest, and then I'm very curious about the obscure ones because this is a history program. We love those little odds and ends kind of deal.
Absolutely. I think the one that I always get drawn back to is the story of a ship called the Andalana. It was a 300-foot iron-hulled tall ship that sailed out of England and arrived here in Tacoma in January of 1899 and then vanished. Huh. Haven't been able to locate it. It is a massive ship.
Yeah.
And it's gone somewhere at the bottom of the desert.
Huh. How does a 300-foot iron ship just kind of disappear in Commencement Bay?
So many good questions on this, right? So there's a lot of theories that it flipped over in the middle of the night because a mooring log on the side of it came unchained.
Okay.
And that the ship with its entire crew on board went under and drowned instantly.
Wow.
But it doesn't account for a lot of the questions as to where it has gone.
Yeah.
Because there have been a couple dive attempts to find the Andalana and a couple dive attempts to find other things that have uncovered the Andalana. And there's discrepancy in the records.
So if I can pause right there. Yeah. Other things, too, that have tried to find the Andalana, have things disappeared and died trying to find the Andalana?
They have.
Oh, okay. I will let you carry on then.
The 2 days after the ship sinks, the railroad has a hard hat diver. That's on contract with them, who've been previously looking for this mysterious safe that had gone away. And that diver actually is successful in locating the shipwreck right away. And their plan is to tow it, to essentially drag it back up to the surface and then reuse it.
Okay.
But all of the lines on these tugboats break. And so the diver has to go down, and there's this tragedy where the pressurizing pump up on deck of the support ship blows one of the leather seals. And the diver is crushed to death at the bottom of Commencement Bay.
Oh, all that happy OSHA-approved 1899 diving technology.
Absolutely. Very, very certified and safe. And then there's just a series of tragedies. It's not the last dive attempt where the diver ends up dying trying to recover pieces of the Andalana. And then eventually the ship just disappears entirely. They can't find it. Mm. The background of the ship and its crew is even more mysterious.
Okay.
I don't want to ruin too much, but suffice to say, digging through the records on this, the ship had a reputation for being cursed basically after the first year that it set sail, to the point where the captain is having a hard time keeping people on board because when he gets to shore, they jump off. They escape the ship. So when they were here in Tacoma, Captain George Stalling, in command of the Andalana, was actually locking up the crew at night so that they couldn't escape in the middle of the night.
I'm sensing a lot of great work trends through these stories already.
Yeah, but really, a lot of benefits to that employment.
Like, how did he even get a crew in the first place if the ship was so haunted that, oh, by the way, your buddies have all been locked on board?
Like, right? So he would hire on a new crew. They would come on as like a group, and then, you know, you go out, you set sail, and then as they're out at sea, a lot of these stories or tragedies start to come to light. It actually had a tremendous amount of people die while it was a working vessel at sea.
Okay, noted. I see Andalana employment opportunities even in the modern day.
Yes.
Avoid them. Noted.
Yeah, absolutely.
Noted. Well, can you possibly tell a few more of those, I guess, accidents or misfortunes that happened to the ship before it disappeared, you know, just off the beach out here?
One of the weirdest ones that sticks with me is that this ship, when it arrived in Shanghai, final port of call before coming to Tacoma and vanishing, one of the crew members went to this like fortune teller in Shanghai and was like, hey, is our ship cursed? And they're like, oh yeah, 100%. And sold him this magic talisman, this token,
okay,
and promised him as long as that was on him, no bad thing could have happened to him. He wasn't going to die at sea. 100% guarantee, right?
I like it.
He arrives in Tacoma with everybody else, and there's a small place in Old Town Tacoma called Seaman's Rest. Mm. It was a boarding house that's now a historically preserved home, but the captain was invited to go have dinner there. He declines the offer, and he sends one of his sailors ashore to go and convey his apologies. The guy shows up at Seaman's Rest and is like, hey, sorry, the captain's not coming, and then passes out. They send him to a local hospital, find out he has this abscessed tooth, extract a tooth. He feels fine, but that night, the Andalana disappears.
Huh.
He goes back to the boarding house, takes off his jacket, is just trying to like collect himself, and finds in the pocket of the jacket he had accidentally taken that magic talisman.
Wow.
He ends up grabbing his buddy's jacket just as a happenstance. And so Percy Buck becomes the only person who survives the sinking of the Andalana just through this series of strange events and happens to have that talisman still on him.
That is incredibly lucky, incredibly creepy, and honestly impressive that someone 7,000 miles away was like, oh yeah, that ship's real bad. Like, no.
Well, you've got the no gift, stop. You can just, you're yeah. Like, oh yeah, for sure. I could go on for days, yeah. But all of the circumstances leading up to the Andalana's disappearance and the fact that it remains a mystery today, definitely one of the quintessential unexplained and bizarre stories of the area.
Well, that is absolutely incredible. And all you local divers out there, wish you guys luck.
Don't touch it.
Yeah. Don't touch it. Don't take anything. If you find a lucky coin, possibly carry one or six with you. All right. So that's the Andalana. What else do we have that, you know, isn't obstructing Commencement Bay or that isn't killing as many people?
I think one of the great sort of mysterious and strange stories of the area, too, that people don't probably talk about enough is Jake Bird.
Jake Bird. Okay. I have no idea who this man is.
That's the problem. So Jake Bird arrives here in Tacoma and shows up on the local radar when he breaks into a house in Hilltop and he dismembers two people with an axe.
So out of curiosity, how recent ago was this? Just
1940.
Oh, okay. We're good.
Go on. It was Halloween night, 1941, I believe. And two officers happen to respond to this incident and they catch the guy. And it's Jake Bird. Now, over this long, drawn-out trial, he gets convicted, and they go back and forth. He's trying to delay his execution, and he ends up confessing to the confirmed murder of 44 women.
More than two.
Absolutely. just above the curve there.
Yep. Just
one of the really weird situations around his whole experience, though, is that during his sentencing, he's given an opportunity to speak. He says that he has the power for the Jake Bird hex, that anybody who has anything to do with his conviction is going to die before he's executed. They end up transporting him out to Walla Walla State Penitentiary. Mm-hmm. And in the period between sentencing and execution, the judge, prosecuting attorney, defense attorney assigned to him, courtroom bailiff, and his jail guard all pass from heart attacks or aneurysms before he's eventually executed by hanging.
Wow.
Right?
That is a interesting power to have.
I don't know where you pick one of those up. It's like magic talisman. I don't know if you should shop at Target for that.
How did he figure out he had this? Like, oh yeah, I have a curse. Everyone just dies around me before oddly specific events.
I assume you have to play test that for a while.
He had 44 chances apparently to play test,
right?
It.
So yeah, he's one of the strange stories of the area, and you can still see in Tacoma some of the places where he was kept during the trial.
Okay.
Underneath Old City Hall, there are some jail cells. And then in the federal courthouse down on A Street, I believe he was tried in that building. And there's a holding cell that he was kept in for a while there that they actually used as an escape room for a while.
That is an amazing backstory for an escape room.
I know, right?
Actual haunted murderers. Well, yeah.
That's a really good selling point.
You might really want to get out. There's no time limit. Just leave. So, kind of following up on that, were these 44 murders that he confessed to all in Tacoma, in the Tacoma region, or?
No, he had sort of a winding path. I believe he was from New Orleans originally.
Oh, okay.
and worked for the railroad and found his way across the country.
I mean, not that that makes it any better. It's just, curious, like, how did they miss the same guy 44 times in Tacoma?
And those are just the confirmed ones.
Ah.
There's a strong chance that he actually had an even more prolific career.
That is morbidly impressive, lack of better words.
The surprising amount of serial killers that find Tacoma as a home base.
Really?
Ted Bundy.
Oh.
Is perhaps our most famous.
That's true. Heard that guy once or twice.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, you're familiar with the name?
Yeah.
Green River. Oh. Obviously operates in the area as well. There was a serial killer out of Thailand who ends up in Point Defiance. The list goes on. You don't have to.
Yeah. Well, this is a haunted history story.
It is.
Yes, I hope my listeners are both scared and intrigued.
You never know where you find that line between true crime and haunting, right?
These are all, I'll say, relatively recent scary stories, because Tacoma, as we know, is, just over 100 years old. I'm born and raised in Boston. We got 400 years of haunted history, but it seems Tacoma's really trying to catch up real quick. Do you have any more recent ones that kind of stand out, or has it kind of calmed down since the 50s, 60s?
I don't know that it's calmed down, but like I said, you walk that line between a true crime and haunted.
Ah, yes.
I think some of the stranger stuff that's happened is that there's a repeat occurrence of Tacoma's sea monster. I don't know if you've heard about this.
I have not.
I think the first account was in like the 1890s, where some fishermen out by Point Defiance said that they hooked something that looked bioluminescent, right?
Okay.
So they're dragging it out of the water, and then it crawls up on shore, and it's described as over 100 feet long. With copper bands that shoots electricity.
That's horrifying to the modern day, let alone back in the day.
And there have been instances over the years where people have said that they've seen something like that show up again. And the more recent ones, I think people have kind of dismissed it as like, it could be anything, right? But a lot of the divers in the area have talked about seeing something. And then the ones I've talked to have been like, well, I'm not saying it's a sea monster. There were a lot of submarine maneuvers that used to take place out in the area here, like under the Narrows Bridge and everything. And they're like, could be anything. Could be anything. Doesn't have to be a sea monster.
Very convincing.
Right? But it continues to show up every like few years that someone sees something unexplainable drifting around under the water in Commencement Bay.
Huh. Well, that is another reason I will avoid kayaking there, beyond, the occasional orca sightings and other large sea creatures.
Yeah, a lot of predatory things on the water. It's totally fine.
Yeah, I made that mistake. Just real casual, trying to sup one day. Yep, nope, not doing that again now. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate this.
Yeah.
So, mentioned earlier that there are kind of obscure ghost stories that people, don't really know about in Tacoma. What's the weirdest haunting that we have here, do you think?
The weirdest haunting is probably Gus. Gus is a ghost that keeps showing up on my radar every time we try and go out and do something.
Sounds like a friendly guy, though.
Right? You would think. And he is one of the more inexplicable ones for me, because I've never been able to find anything to like give me some background or shading on Gus. But Gus operates in the old City Hall building and has just developed over the last several decades a reputation for kind of being like a carousing, fun scamp, essentially.
I'm still seeing no negatives to this guy. Sounds like pretty fun party.
Well, here's the thing. He was notorious for destroying high-end bottles of alcohol.
Yes.
As people were setting up this restaurant in Old City Hall in like the 1980s, he would just throw the most expensive alcohol off the top shelf at people.
I am now mad at him for that waste and abuse.
An ultimate party foul.
That is unforgivable.
It absolutely is. So Gus keeps showing up. I feel like all the people who've been around Tacoma for a while have had some sort of run-in with Gus down in sort of the Whiskey Row area.
I'm going to have to keep my eye out and start hoarding my bottles very, very carefully. Yeah, just for
like
safety.
Wrap them, right?
Safety reasons, of course. Keep my hands on them at all times. When did Gus begin? Was it just kind of like you said in the 80s?
That's the hard thing to track down, because like that building has gone up and down. I think it stopped being the City Hall in the 1950s. And then like 70s and 80s, it sort of had a resurgence.
Yep.
I think that's kind of where the Gus story really took off. But now that it's just empty, he's had some time to set up shop and make it his own.
Well, I'm curious because they're talking about reopening the building in the near future. Well, they've been talking about that for a hot minute, so I'm sure it's just around the corner. But I'm curious if when they do get to that, if Gus will make an appearance again after he's been living there so long, undisturbed, if you will.
I wonder. I got to take a tour of that building.
Oh, yeah?
Back in maybe 2018, and the security team, I was just trying to get like stories from them, and two of them had the same story unconnected to each other, that sometimes they patrol that building, and it would look like someone was standing at the end of a hallway.
Okay.
And they'd call out to them and be like, hey, you can't be in the building. What's going on here? And that every time they would get down on all fours and then run down a hallway.
Oh, my.
And they would always give chase, they'd pursue, and they'd never find anyone inside the building.
As someone who has worked security back in the day and my Renaissance man of odd jobs, the second I see a shadowy figure sprint away on all fours, I do not pursue. I'm just like, you know, we're going to let that one go.
That's outside your wheelhouse, right?
There's nothing positive that can come from whatever will happen down that hallway.
I think that's a good rule of thumb just in life.
I both want to explore all these old buildings now and also do not want to explore all these old buildings now.
That's a lot of self-preservation in there. I respect that.
Yeah, I've made it this far. I'm trying a few more good years at least. So besides Old City Hall, which seems to be just kind of a focal point of a lot of Tacoma lore, are there any other buildings around town that are particularly haunted or particularly known for spookiness?
It's like I was saying earlier. Yeah. There's the ones that are super famous, like the Rust Mansion.
Oh, okay.
Which has had tragedy attached to it from the very start. To the more obscure ones, like the Bradley Bodega building down on Pack Ave as well. And so like the Rust Mansion, I think, is one of the more famous ones. William Rust, the founder of Ruston.
Ah, yes.
That was his big home that they had constructed. And there was a tragedy where their oldest son dies. And there's some mysteriousness about that because after he dies, he's erased. They never talk about him. There's no memorial. They never bring him up again. And there's a lot of historic evidence to suggest that William Rust actually murdered his son inside the Rust Mansion, and then they leave it and go to a different, much creepier mansion down in Yakima.
Improvements all around.
And then that pretty much kicks off the tragedy. The next owner of the Rust Mansion ends up committing suicide during a party inside the home. Just chain events of sadness.
Yeah, so definitely a buzzkill for the party. Probably doesn't help the mansion's resale value, but
Weirdly enough.
That's based on your illusion, it keeps happening. Things keep happening, so maybe not. You know, it's a nice addition to the rumpus room, I guess.
Yeah, you know, everyone needs something attached to their home. So I think that's definitely one of the more famous ones. But the bodega, the Bradley building, is one that people don't really talk about. And it is a former brothel that after it gets shut down significantly later than you would think in Tacoma's history.
So you said this was on Pack Ave downtown, right?
Yeah. Okay. So, in fact, just kitty corner to Old City Hall building.
Okay.
Where Thai Pepper is.
Okay. I'm used to all these on, you know, the north end where the old sailing laws are like, oh, yes, everything was once a brothel. Yes, it was the docks, yes.
It kind of ruled thumb. You're like, oh, it's empty space. It's like a Spirit Halloween. You're like, what am I going to put in there?
Good old early 1900s entrepreneurs.
It's a good business model.
All right, back to the story. Yeah. Sorry, you know.
But a lot of the original parts of that brothel after it gets shut down are still up there. Beds, furniture, mattresses left up there after the vice raid that shuts it down.
Okay.
And there's all sorts of weird stories that circulate about that building as well.
You said it was open a bit later than we thought. When did the vice raid shut this down?
The best thing that I can find is that there was a huge crackdown on prostitution in the 1950s.
Sorry, I love not only the haunted history, but the general history of the city, because it's not like, oh, 250, 500 years ago. It's, oh, yeah, my uncle or my grandfather knew the guy who this happened to back in that day. Like, oh, this is legitimate close-up history.
As you brought up, as a city of Tacoma is still fairly young in comparison to even a lot of U.S. cities. But we packed in a lot
Yes.
As quickly as possible. Really hit that, hit the ground running.
Hey, that's impressive. You gotta respect that in a growing city. Moving back to this, you said it was the Bodega House or the...
Yeah, the Bradley Bodega.
The Bradley Bodega.
I mean, that whole strip has incredible history and haunted history. The old Odd Otter, well, I guess young Odd Otter Brewery building across from the Bodega.
That's a favorite haunt of mine. Yes.
It has, plenty of spirits in there.
All the puns.
That's a USO number two. So for the black division of the Army, before desegregation, that was their dance hall. And there's all sorts of reports of people coming back to visit that place. I think most famously, Dory Miller from Pearl Harbor had one of his last drinks before being redeployed to the Pacific Theater, getting killed in action.
Yeah.
But he was there at USO number two back in the 1940s.
That is tragic, honestly, but also very curious.
Yeah. The people that run Odd Otter now have had multiple times where they've just felt people come back, like a return.
Yeah.
Kind of a respectful ghost, but definitely people moving stuff around at night. And coming back to their old haunts.
Yeah.
Old haunts, new haunts.
You know, old tenants can't get rid of them sometimes. It happens.
I know how that goes. I can only imagine the place is all haunts.
So, have you had a chance to tour more of these haunted buildings you mentioned? Like, the Bodega with all its old furniture untouched? Like, I can only imagine how...
Horrifying.
Spine tingling, horrifying. Like, there's something about just seeing, like, you know, a bed that hasn't been touched in, like, let alone a couple weeks when you're on vacation, but like a decades. Like, oof, this is especially one of, you know, vice and, you know, murder mystery, basically.
It's a whole accordion of emotions, right? Because not only you're like, well, that's a terrifying bed just by itself, but the trying to unravel the story of how something like that, like prime real estate in downtown Tacoma, remains abandoned. For so long, what it can be pushing people out of that space is definitely something, like, you can feel it.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the Nathaniel Orr home at all?
I am not.
That's one of my absolute favorites. It's the oldest home in the town of Steilacoom, not far from here. And Nathaniel Orr was a pioneer out there. He set up a wagon shop, builds this home, and his family lives in it their entire lives. 1860s onward.
So, sounds like a great wholesome story that you are about to
ruin forever.
Yes, all right. Carry on.
It had three owners, Nathaniel and Emma Orr. After they pass, their oldest son becomes the owner of the home and never changes anything. Doesn't change the furniture, the rugs. Everything is left exactly as it was as his childhood home while he's living there with his wife. Eventually, they pass. And he bequeaths it to the Historic Society there, where it's now part of their museum. And it's exactly the same.
Oh.
It has the same furniture, the same toys, the same pictures, the same wear in the rugs. And nothing has ever changed in the home. To the point where the biggest thing that's ever happened to it was there was a landslide. And the home slips off its foundation, slides down a hill, and gets caught in a pear tree, I think, that Nathaniel Orr had planted.
Yep.
And it was built in such a way that after some fundraising, all they had to do was reinforce the foundation and then just push the house back. And it literally clicked back into position. It was just like, chook.
It speaks to construction methods of old.
Right.
Like, no.
First of all, I want that guy building my house. Maybe not my basement, but
the house itself, good to go.
And so it just remains as this, like, terrifying capsule to the point where, like, when some of the early children from the Orr family had passed away, they took those clothes and used them as insulation on pipes in the basement, and they remain there to this day.
That's absolutely horrifying. My home that I grew up in is actually... Fun fact, older than the country, 1769, you know, good old East Coast homes, you know, little drafty. We obviously had to, like, rip out the walls and put modern insulation in because horsehair and hay don't stack up after 300 years. Yeah. I can only imagine doing that and finding old children's clothing in the wall and things like that. That would be terrifying.
Right?
Like, I would, no, not.
Yeah. Things where you're like, maybe it's time to remodel, but apparently Not so for the Orr family.
Not in the Orr family. Noted.
I've had definitely weird things happen in that building where, like, you can just feel that you're not alone in there.
So they say that nothing has changed in this home, and it's they really love, for some reason, the late 1800s, early 1900s aesthetic. Good on them, you know, sticking to their guns. But has anything ever just, like, can you see something clear on a shelf shifted or, you know, spots in the carpet where, you know, hey, why are there new prints there when?
No. Every time I've ever been there, everything remains pretty much exactly as it is. The docents that run it have had weird stuff happen to them. I think the weirdest I've seen is there's a lamp in the living room that hangs from the ceiling that will sometimes just like circle. And it's usually the later you stay, like it'll just get a little more aggressive, and they have no idea why.
Huh. So Orr's house, also not checking that box anytime soon.
Maybe just go in the day.
Yeah, okay, daylight hours, even better. But it's fall here.
Oh, true. So they are all nighttime hours.
So it goes. Speaking of old, creepy little houses that haven't changed much, there's a cabin in the north.
You're thinking of the Job Carr cabin.
I am thinking of the Job Carr cabin, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so that's one of my favorite Tacoma things because it is innocent on the surface, and then the deeper you go, the weirder it gets, right?
Go on.
So the Job Carr cabin that's down in Old Town is a replica of Job Carr's original cabin.
Okay.
It's a historic museum, very cool. But I think a lot of people assume that that is like the original cabin. How is it still here?
I totally did not. Yes, thank you.
But it hides a lot of the weird tragedy of that area, including the fact that what is that park right there used to be a pond. And when the city was developing at that time, they decided, they're like, you know what's terrible for tourism and people? Salmon. So they fish all the salmon to extinction. And then they fill in the pond and they create this open space for development.
Yep.
Which, of course, is a park now.
Yep.
Nothing ever takes off of it. But it seals off Buckley Gulch. So if you go just past Job Carr Cabin, the entrance is called Catherine Ersick Park. It is a wild, untouched gulch, 200 feet deep. It goes just over a mile into the heart of Tacoma, and it's this complete wilderness area. It is so haunted. It is so haunted.
It's funny you say that, because before, you know, let you dig deeper into that, you know, walking past the park with some friends on, it was perfect, really. It was just an absolutely rainy night out of nowhere, absolutely, like, howling in our face. And we see the quaint little cabin with, like, little lantern flickering with just the undergrowth behind it. And our friends are, you know, more native than we are. And we're just like, yeah, so you don't go back there. And we're like, oh, but it's a park. Like, it looks like nice, not during a rainstorm. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, no, there's just voices and demons in there. And you will avoid that place. So, like, okay, the fact that you are immediately this strongly projecting this feeling about a place, maybe we won't go explore that when the sun comes out. So, back to you on that.
I mean, they nailed it. Like I said, the cabin is just a good indicator of the history that has taken place there. That stretch, quiet 30th Street down there, right, used to be the roughest street in all of Tacoma. In the early days when we were a port town considered second most dangerous only after Barbary Coast.
Wow. That is an impressive feat.
Right? And like little Tacoma, like population of just under 1,000, 13 saloons and brothels just on that strip right down there.
That is impressive use of space.
Right? Like really maximize your business model. And it was rough. The officers just wouldn't patrol at night. You would just come and clean up the carnage in the morning, and like murders, deaths, debauchery, literally just soaking into the ground. So what is a very sleepy little section down in Old Town has had, really from its start, not just a tremendous amount of murders and like drunken fights from the sailor days, but the mob connection, the whole like top of the ocean. I've divulged too far.
Yeah, I was gonna say, wow, okay.
It's a rough part of town that looks real quaint.
I see the camera panning slowly across the bay. Kids playing on a stoop.
It's a dock town in Tacoma. It's one of my absolute favorite parts of Tacoma. We actually lead ghost tours down there just because so much has happened in that small area. And It looks so innocent.
Yeah.
But from the Gulch to the remains of Chinatown, Old Town has it going on.
No, thank you. That sounds absolutely incredible. And might have to, you know, hop on one of your very supervised, and I'm hoping well-lit tour space.
Moderately secure.
I've taken worse odds. Any favorite ghost stories that you haven't already mentioned, or just, you know, quirky little hauntings that everyone should know about?
Mm-hmm. That's always.
Well, I still got you.
That's such a good question. There's an unexplained story of a little kid that shows up in people's upstairs bedrooms.
It's terrifying in every regard.
Absolutely, right? where nobody knows anything except this kid is always faceless. Like a small shape of a person, no face, dark hair, and that people have talked about waking up in the middle of the night, Old Town, Stadium District, into Hilltop, and they'll just see this shape standing in the corner of their bedroom, and that they'll never get a response, but it's always a little kid just standing in the corner, and that if they don't do anything, they get closer and closer every night to the point where people wake up thinking that they're awake, but are actually still in this dream, maybe, not sure, but always just this intense sense of dread as this kid just waits in the corner of their bedroom.
Wow. That is an absolute nightmare. And you say if they don't do anything, that they get closer each night?
Yeah, like if the people I've talked to who've had this happen have been like, like at first I was like, it's whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just hallucinating. Maybe I had too much to drink or something.
Yeah.
But if they never call out or they're like,
yeah,
what are you doing here or something like that, it just becomes more intense and they get closer and closer every night until they're acknowledged.
Well, I am glad to hear that apparently just asking who they are stops it, because I feel, you know, I yell at something faceless, it's going to come at me. Like, no, we're going to talk.
Basic human etiquette, just say hi, introduce yourself.
Are you going to be here long? So, we have faceless children, mm-hmm. We have a ship that can't be found, we have magical sea creatures that are hundreds of feet long and will tear down massive ships. Mm-hmm. What else do we have? We have haunted brothels and bars and hotels and anywhere you'd want to go that's fun.
Is haunted.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the makings of a really good Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, I would say this sounds like a good weekend ahead for us. And again, all of this between late 1800s and, you know, the 1980s.
Really, honestly, really getting after it, you know.
Tacoma history is magical and full of wonders. If you would like to find out more of these wonders in person, you can check out Pretty Gritty Tours with Chris, running all around town by the sounds of it.
Absolutely. Downtown, awesome. Old Town, all around.
Sounds great. And if you want some more hands-on, come over to the Tacoma Historical Society. My team of volunteers will be here to assist you. I'm Joe Bomar on behalf of Grit City Stories. Stay haunted, Tacoma.